Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Beyond the mountains of cast-off wrapping paper, through the fog of holiday nog, is that an LCD TV glimmering beneath the tree? You lucky thing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org, and by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Amy Scott, sitting in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Tuesday, the 25th of December. Great to have you with us. If you celebrate Christmas, by now you're probably done with all the unwrapping, maybe nursing a few paper cuts. There's a pretty good chance at least one of those gifts had some kind of screen and power cord attached. The Consumer Electronics Association estimates Americans spent some $22 billion on gadgets this holiday season. That would mean those MP3 players and Blu-ray what's-its made up almost a quarter of all gifts. Maybe you got that flat-screen TV you've been coveting? The makers of those devices have been coveting your business. Today, three Japanese electronics makers announced an alliance. Matsushita, Hitachi, and Canon say they're linking up their liquid crystal display, or LCD, businesses to better compete. Sharp and Toshiba announced a similar tie-up last week. Those screens are in ever higher demand these days. Analysts are predicting a surge of high-definition TV purchases in the next year, before Uncle Sam switches off the analog signal in early 2009. Oh, and you know that harmonic convergence of your television set and PC you've been hearing about? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer says it's finally on its way.
Over the next 5 years, your TV and PC will get cozy.
There are a whole range of new devices that are coming out so that you can enjoy your photographs, for example, on your big screen TV set, or listen to the music that you've accumulated on iTunes through your home stereo.
That's Charles Galvin of Forrester Research. But what if your TV and PC aren't on speaking terms? Tech analyst Stephen Baker of NPD Group says that's the 64-gigabyte question.
And the real challenge for the electronics companies is finding a way to make all these products be able to talk to each other in an easy way that most consumers can make happen in their home with a minimal amount of work and only a slight increase in the cost and aggravation, probably.
Aggravation is definitely not on the Christmas list, at least not for 59-year-old Anton Riel. He's standing outside the Apple Store in a Maryland mall just outside of Washington with his daughter Erica Sundberg Riel. Anton Riel wonders why anyone would bother trying to network everything together.
I'm going to listen to music. I want to listen to music. I'm going to watch TV. I want to watch TV. If I want to be on my computer, you know, I'm on my computer. I don't plan to be doing it in front of a TV.
But perhaps the real prey is 19-year-old Erica, an enthusiastic high-tech multitasker.
Kids are so busy and everything, it just makes it easier for us.
So even if yuppie parents don't want the PC in their living rooms, it might come anyway, invited in by their kids. In Bethesda, Maryland, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Investors were invited to take the day off. Most of the world's markets were closed today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. In honor of the holiday, we're bringing out the leftovers, some of the favorite dishes we served up this year. If you ate any pie today, it likely involved an ingredient only marketers could dream up. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner has the story.
get all the measuring tools you need.
My mom is about to make a pie, and in her book, that requires Crisco. Not butter, not lard, not some generic shortening. Crisco.
Because I like it, because it's all vegetable, and it's really better for your health, I think.
Mom, a marketer's dream, and a product of marketing history, too. See, Crisco maker Procter & Gamble was a pioneer in the emerging science of creating demand. Historian Susan Strasser says the Crisco experiment started in 1911 when the company was selling Ivory soap. Cottonseed oil was a key ingredient.
And they decided to develop a product that would use a lot more cottonseed oil so that they could control that market, really.
Procter & Gamble scientists came up with this white, fluffy substance. It sort of resembled lard and yet had no taste and no smell. It wasn't food exactly, but the company would ask consumers to bake and fry with it. Thus began an American mass marketing milestone.
Originally, they tried to call it Crispo, but then they discovered that a cracker factory already had the trademark.
P&G hawked its new product as a scientific discovery. The company sent free samples to every grocer in America. They held Crisco teas, an early version of the focus group. P&G even niche marketed the product as kosher to the Jewish community.
One of the rabbis, the Cincinnati rabbi, famously said that the Hebrew race had been waiting for 4,000 years for Crisco.
Marketing scholar David Stewart says P&G's genius was not only giving people a convincing reason to try the product, but training them to use it as well with free cookbooks and recipes.
First of all, they focused on the health benefits, recognizing that this was a time when we didn't know about trans fat and so forth. And then they taught people how to use it. They taught people how to cook, gave them ideas. And between giving them a real benefit and information about how to use the product, they were able to get people to adopt it.
Crisco's crowning achievement was creating demand for something nobody knew they wanted. That's the cornerstone of the consumer economy, after all.
Keep cooking with Crisco. It's all vegetable. It's digestible.
All of this really gave women a new role in society, as particularly as consumers.
Historian Gary Cross says pioneering mass marketers like Procter & Gamble won over American housewives with their persuasive pitches.
You women kind of have your hands full these days.
Well, it's the truth, isn't it, friends?
But women were eager pupils of the emerging consumer economy, too. Women may have lacked political power in those early days, but the new consumerism gave them economic influence like never before, particularly during World War II.
There's so much volunteer work to do for the war, even the children are helping out. Honestly, with a little Crisco in your frying pan, you can have supper on the table in a jiffy.
Funny, that's what my mom says, too. Her Crisco cherry pie has been a fixture in the family for half a century now. P&G may have created the demand for this fluffy white stuff, but ultimately it's consumers, like my mom, who decide whether products end up a flash in the pan or one of life's necessities. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Sarah's story was part of a series we did this year on the consumer economy called Consumed. You can hear some of those original Crisco ads on our website. It's marketplace.org. The markets were open in China today. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index fell 0.6%. Investing is still relatively new in China. There are more than 100 million investors now, four times the number last year. Another 300,000 people open up brokerage accounts every day. Our correspondent Scott Tong found one of those new investors quite close to home.
We call her Ai. That's Chinese for auntie. Ai is a 42-year-old migrant. She's from a village 5 hours away. She babysits, she cleans, whatever we ask. Offer $1.25 an hour, and that would be the rip-off the foreigners price. Our Ai works really hard, but she doesn't say much, so I'm dying to know what she's thinking inside. Now I know. The stock market. Yesterday at the playground, she and her sister were discussing the latest machinations of the Shanghai Stock Exchange. It's tripled since 2005.
2 years ago, we started thinking about investing in stocks, putting in $8,000. Everyone talks about it, at the market, at the playground. One friend made 10 times his salary playing the market, so he quit his job to play stocks.
Welcome to Market Mania. The cliché here is when the IE start opening stock accounts, it's a sure sign of a bubble. A New Yorker here told me it feels like when the Powerball jackpot back home hits $50 million. It's all anyone can talk about. This is China's version of the dot-com frenzy.
The greediness should be same because they want to take a risk. They think they can make a quick money.
That's Ping Zhou of GE Asset Management.
The newer retail investors, they don't understand financial markets and they don't understand the risk. So they put the money in, they think they can make money because they are gambling.
One gambler doctored the lyrics to this trendy love ballad. It's regular on the karaoke scene here. Instead of the original, "I'll love you until I die," the new version goes, "I will buy and hold until I die." Now, it's all fun and games and song while the party lasts. The problem is, a lot of the housekeepers and IE showed up late to this party, just in time for the market to tank 21%. You can feel a lot of the pain at this local retail brokerage firm. Folks here, some are in pajamas and slippers, are crowding around trading screens. They're trying to sell and get out. Retail investors account for a lot of the volatility in the Chinese stock market. They own 60% of the shares, but they make 90% of the trades. One of those traders is this Ai. She's the cleaning woman for the brokerage firm.
I just opened an account last Sunday. I never invested before, so I put in $2,500. And already, I'm down 10%.
She's an example of what the pros unkindly call the last suckers in. She bought at the top. It's one of many rookie investor mistakes that are now coming to light. And here's another. This retired farmer invested money that she couldn't afford to lose.
We're all laid off from state-owned companies. Folks like us in our 40s and 50s can't find any work these days. Last month, I started investing in the market and lost $1,500 my son needs for college.
There's a lot of anger here. Folks blaming the regulators who just raised a stock trading tax to cool down the market. Again, asset manager Ping Zhou.
If they lose money, they will blame government because they don't understand government should have some measures to squeeze out the bubble in the market.
In the end, he thinks the latest tumble is good. It's brought a measure of sanity for the new retail investors, the taxi drivers, the IEs. As for our nanny, she's opted to sit on the sidelines for now. She thinks it's too much of a risk for her hard-earned money. But someday the market will zoom up again. And again, she'll be tempted to quit this gig and become a day trader. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Coming up, the damage of distance.
Anybody who works in oil patch, it's hard on the family. There's lots of divorces. And 3 or 4 years ago, we were working just outside Calgary, and out of, like, maybe 50 guys, I think I was the only one left married.
But first, let's do the numbers. No U.S. stock market numbers to report today, so how about a look at holiday consumption? Did you know Americans throw away 25% more trash than usual between Thanksgiving and New Year's? That adds up to 1 million extra tons per week. Not clear how much of that is fruitcake. But consider this, we dump some 38,000 miles of ribbon each year, enough to tie a bow around the earth. And how about the batteries running all those new gadgets? They keep going and going and going. The EPA says about 40% of battery sales are charged up this time of year. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Marketplace aims to be insightful and provocative. And if you send our stories along, you can be too. Log on to our website and forward any story you hear. Every day's rundown is there, along with transcripts of the show and links to individual pieces. It's at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. The African-American holiday Kwanzaa begins. Boxing Day is observed in the United Kingdom and other countries. In Los Angeles, 5,829 Oscar nomination ballots are mailed out to Academy members. And shoppers hit post-holiday sales. Shop, shop, shop. I'm Michelle Phillippe. Happy holidays.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. This holiday shopping season, it paid to be a discounter. Early signs suggest the Costco's and JCPenney's of the world fared better than stores that didn't slash prices. Commentator Mary Annette Pember knows an even better place to find bargains.
I recently learned about the freegan movement. Freegans are a group of socially conscious folks who engage in something they call waste reclamation. They are the ultimate recyclers, righteously enjoying the luxury of choice as they dig through dumpsters and landfills. Native Americans have been employing waste reclamation for centuries. We call it going to the dump because we're too poor not to. For many people on the reservation, the dump has been a store with infinite variety and a drive-in movie theater all rolled into one. During my career as a Native journalist covering Indian country, I have found that the dump looms large for many Native folks. The economic necessity to reclaim waste and scrounge for entertainment seems to be intertribal. An Iowa friend remembers the dump as the Indian furniture store for his mobile family. At each new home, his dad would announce, "We need some furniture, kids. Let's go to the dump." In my Ojibwa mother's day, the dump was even a date destination. She recalls the time she wore her famous silk stockings to watch her beau shoot rats at the dump. In retrospect, she noted she was a bit overdressed. My Ojibwa colleague reports that his brother could never resist carrying home old radios from the dump and plugging them in. At best, nothing happened. At worst, they sparked and blew all the fuses in the house, causing his dad to yell, "You guys are no good!" Native people are born to making do with what life offers us. We go to the dump when we need to. We go with humor and a genuine spirit of discovery. In true Indian form, we laugh in the face of such forces that seek to grind our spirits down. Recalling the importance of landfills in our lives, we soar high above the dump, so high that it doesn't really touch us.
Mary Annette Pember is a freelance journalist. She's a member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Tribe in Wisconsin. Send us your comments. You'll find us at marketplace.org. Time now for another look at the global economy through the eyes of workers. Today, as part of our series Working, we look back at the story of Canadian oil worker Blair Gent. He lives in Newfoundland in the eastern part of Canada. But talk about a commute. Several times a year, he travels west to the oil sands of Alberta for work. And he's not the only one. Chris Brooks brings us Blair's story.
Brody. Huh? Time to get up, my baby.
Why?
It's 2:30 in the morning when 10-year-old Brody Gent opens his eyes to see his father with his bag packed, ready to drive to the airport.
All right, baby. Let's go.
Brody lives with his parents in Harbour Mill, Newfoundland, a tiny community of just 182 souls tucked into the Atlantic coast of Canada. But his dad is going to work on the other side of the continent.
I'm Blair Gent, industrial mechanic.
With chronic unemployment in Harbour Mill, this quiet 39-year-old commutes all the way to Alberta, 3,000 miles away.
It's not so bad if you're young and got no family, but when you're tied down and got to pay the bills.
Blair's wife, Pam, and Brody slip in beside him for the 3-hour drive up the coast to the airport, keeping their eyes peeled for any moose that might suddenly dart out of the blackness and cross the highway. After tonight, the family won't be together again for nearly 2 months.
Anybody who works in the oil patch, it's hard on the family. There's lots of divorces. And 3 or 4 years ago, we were working just outside Calgary, and out of, like, maybe 50 guys, I think I was the only one left married.
Would you think of moving the family up to Fort McMurray?
Not a chance. Now, you know, scenario of every boom town, it's hard and fast, and there's a lot of hard elements, and family life is way better down here.
If you can call it family life, last year, Blair was away for 6 months straight. Right now, he's on a 6-2 rotation. 6 weeks in Alberta, 2 home with Brody and Pam.
You know, Oprah had on it, for optimum health, you need to have sex 200 times a year. He's only home 40 days a year. So we're going to die early.
Okay. A quick curbside goodbye at the airport at 4 a.m., and Blair steps onto his flight to Fort McMurray. 8 hours from now, and he'll start his day installing instrumentation controls on the oil sands site. The maze of remote sensing transmitters that monitor things like pressure and flow rate for the oil extraction process.
You got everything ashore?
His nights will be a bunk in a company-owned work camp. Pam and Brody start their long drive back to Harbor Mill in the dark. Theirs is the flip side of Blair's long-distance job, making the family function while he's away. It's Pam Gent's work, and it starts now.
What?
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong.
What is it?
Well, you know, just dropping your dad off. Kind of sad, don't you think?
You guess.
Back in Harbor Mill, Pam runs this small grocery store. It's the only store in town, but a tiny community with only 77 mailboxes can't give them enough business to make ends meet.
There's a lot of hope that the store will do better, so there won't be as much of a need for him to work away. But, I mean, right now, economically, we do need that money.
There's kind of a sad irony running underneath this work situation that Pam and Blair find themselves in. Up until 3 years ago, they both had dream jobs in Toronto, working 9 to 5, and the family was together every night.
Financially, it couldn't have been better. We had the big house and the big mortgage and the 2 vehicles.
But then a couple of things happened. Back in Harbor Mill, Pam's grandmother died and left her house. And then, one day in Toronto,
I came home from work, you know, picked my son up from daycare, started supper, and on the news, it had this little girl was missing off a street, and this wasn't too far from where we lived. Even though I could see and hear my son outside playing from my kitchen, I just instinctively went in and grabbed him and brought him in and locked the door. And that was the very first time that I felt fear. And then the news just got worse. The next day they found her body parts. She had been, it was horrible. So then we just made plans. We put the house on the market and we were coming home.
Home to this little fishing village with a beach and a perfect swimming hole, a great place to bring kids up in. But
Blair has to work away. We keep thinking that the work away is a temporary thing. But this has been going on now since 2004 for us.
The Alberta time zone is 3.5 hours away, so the family stays in touch through voice messaging and phone calls in the wee hours when Blair's back in his bunk.
Your call has been forwarded to TELUS Mobility Voice Messaging Center. Blair, Jen. Not available. At the tone, please record your message.
Hi, Blair, it's me. I just got home. So give me a call if you get back, okay?
On Father's Day, it's 5 a.m. in Alberta.
Hello?
Hey, little boy.
Hey, Dad.
How are you doing?
Okay.
Don't
forget what you gotta wish him. Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Thank you.
Half-asleep phone conversations like this are often what the father-son relationship consists of while Blair's away. Pam works hard to make up for it.
I'm not gonna pretend today's not Father's Day. If Blair was here, we'd probably do a beach bonfire. We'd have scallops. Scallops is Blair's favorite meal. We're doing all those things because I wanted to make sure that it's a special day for Brody and that he doesn't feel lost, because one of his little friends
His father came home on his 8-day rotation and happens to be here today for Father's Day. And that's Brody's best friend.
Here, I want you to wash your hair tonight.
I did last night.
Thanks for your help. You're really a big help. So where do you think Dad is? Tell me where the provinces
Alberta.
Are. Yeah, and what city? Fort McMurray.
I've been with Blair since I was 16 years old. And the very first time that we lived together was on a single bed. And that single bed had room enough for two more people. We were that close. And that's how we slept for a lot of years, that close. When Blair started going away, you get used to sleeping on your own. And now when he comes home, he has a spare bed and he goes out there. And actually, it was kind of funny this time home. One of the first things he said to me was, "Oh, it's so nice to have my bed back." His bed is the spare bed.
Message marked urgent.
Hi, it's me. Hope everybody does well. Give me a call later, okay? All right. Bye-bye.
End of message.
So, I don't know. By the time we get content with having him back, he'll be gone. We'll be discontent with him gone for the first little time. Just as we get content again, he comes home, and then I have to accept him, and he has to accept me, and everything is jungled up, and then the cycle starts all over again.
It starts over again at airport arrivals, with Pam dolled up in a low-cut sweater, holding a cup of takeout coffee for Blair.
Where are you?
After an 8-hour flight, Blair appears in a fresh-pressed shirt, clean-shaven, smelling of aftershave.
This must be your come-home shirt, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. It's the only one clean.
The little things that show how much they welcome this part of the cycle. And Blair will be home long enough to paint the porch and fix the vacuum cleaner and maybe go fishing with his son. And then Pam will drive him back to the airport and they'll each head back to their two separate worlds, home and work. Pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that should fit together, but don't.
Chris Brooks lives and works in Canada. His report was part of our series Working. It's co-produced by Homelands Productions. For more from our series, visit marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, North Americans bought an estimated 33 million Christmas trees this year, the live kind. Not sure what to do with yours after the holidays? The anglers of Lake Havasu in Arizona have a novel plan. Drop your evergreen in the lake. The Lake Havasu Christmas tree recycling program has been going on for about 7 years. Clippings from trees and wreaths are bundled and dropped into the water to create a natural habitat for the fish. Fake trees are verboten, as are any traces of tinsel or those popcorn strings. The program runs from tomorrow through January 5th. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the markets were closed for the Christmas holiday. Thanks to Renita Jablonski and Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by John Buckley. Next time, looking for dirt on a company?
I love to look at the footnotes because that's where the really good nitty-gritty stuff is often buried. And sometimes I've seen even footnotes to footnotes to footnotes. So companies really go to extreme lengths to try to bury really the good stuff, and you just kind of have to ferret it out.
I'm Amy Scott. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.